So mastering the phone was last week, and now we're going to go into part two, mastering the home with the masters. And so today we have an agency manager on our call. We have Ben Safapour, and I'll tell you, Brandon, we got to spend some time, Sarah and I did, with Ben and Sarah. They stayed at her house with Brindley, their daughter, and we've always said this, you know, because we've gotten to hang out with them a good amount, but hard to find two better people than Ben and Sarah. An unbelievable couple, and, you know, they just have their people's, you know, best interest at their heart. You know, they want them to succeed, and, you know, great leadership, too, from Ben, because, Ben, you can go out there and turn it on, like, you know, with the best of them. Good production. Ben, what do you, when you're out in the field, I mean, you're an agency manager now, Ben, but when you're out there, you're, what kind of production are you averaging on a weekly basis?
Thanks, Casey, for having me on. First off, appreciate you guys, you and Brandon, you and Brian, what you guys have put together for us. We couldn't work with better guys, and your wives and families are awesome. So
Thank you, man.
To get to know you guys. But I've been doing about a little over 20,000 a month last 3 or 4 months. So kind of right around that each month.
Good stuff. And then we have also, we have Doug Suttonfield, Doug Sweater Vest Suttonfield. What were you, number two seed, Doug?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
Now, even though you fell from a two seed this week, and who took you down again? Was it
a brand new rider?
Brand new wild card.
Brand new rider, you know.
You thought you had it in the bag, didn't you?
I'm Doug Suttonfield, director Edward Pritchett, and thanks also for having me on the call, Casey and Brandon.
Absolutely, man. What are you producing on a monthly basis?
My goal was 20 apps a month. So
20 apps a month.
20 apps, and sometimes that's 32,000, sometimes it's 15,000. But okay. I focus on app count and covering as many families as I can.
Great. Doug, as Brandon mentioned earlier, is the Golden Pin Award winner, Quality of Business Award winner last year. Awesome, unbelievable. In fact, probably the best in the company from a quality of business, you know, net place number, issue rate, and persistency. So rewrite some good business, Doug. Appreciate you being on the call. Julie Rinaldi, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How long have you been with us now, Julie?
I think I'm in month six right now.
Month six. And you've been bringing some sunshine to my day with your cute little text there with a little cat with a scope on. Hello. It's good that I was showing Brandon that before the call. But you're fired up about some November to Remember, and I know you're still in there, and hopefully we'll carry on through the end and find yourself in Belize. But you've been with us for 6 months. What are you averaging on a weekly or monthly basis right now?
Boy, you know what? I try to shoot for 40 grand a month, obviously.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think my best month has been like 39,000 so far.
Okay.
But I'm trying to average at least 25,000 a month.
Okay, 25,000 a month. I like it. And then finally, we have Brad Smith on the call. Brad, are you there?
I am here.
All right, same thing, man. How long have you been with us for?
I've been with the company for 7 months, started in March, and end of March of this year.
Good stuff. And what are you running on a monthly basis now?
Usually between 20 and 25,000. Last month was a little bit better, but average of 20 to 25, I'd say.
And I think what you have in common with everyone else on the phone is you're also building an agency. What's your agency looking like right now?
We did 67 or 68,000 last month, and
nice.
We're shooting for 100 this month.
I like that goal, and you had one of the top producers, right, in the company as well this week? The top producer.
Yeah. The top producer, Nate Offer, yeah.
Number one.
So,
yeah.
Awesome month so far, and looking forward to seeing big things from you guys, but, you know, you and your brother Matt have definitely made some waves in a good way coming on with the company. So Have you found that it helps you out in the field when you have an extra 40 or 50 grand outside of your own personal production?
Oh, yeah. The posture is completely different. You don't need it as much, and you can really focus on what's in the best interest of the client instead of my bank account. So definitely gives you a better posture.
Sure. When somebody is brand new, I think it's important that they understand, you know, because sometimes they want to go out and create some results, but something that will help you create results very quickly is to get yourself in a position where, you know, where your posture is a little bit different. You know, if you have two or three recruits going out in the field with you week one, and that's something that Nate had, right? How many people do you feel like Nate, if he were to draw his agency out, because his first week in the field was last week, right?
Yeah, it was. It was his first week.
How many people, he just got his insurance license. He goes out and does, how much was it, Brandon?
It was 15,000, basically, 14,900.
Okay, first week out. And, Brad, you guys are big on creating a story for yourself, you know, especially if you want to build a business. You guys are big on creating that story, right? And so Nate goes out, creates a good story for himself. First week out, $15,000 in production, you know. Lynn Watkins has that same kind of story. He can look somebody in the eye and say, my first week with this company in this business, I went out and did $11,000. He has it down to the penny, over $11,000 of production. That's a great story, but how many, more importantly, how many recruits, how many kind of people did he already have in line to either get their license, already out in the field? What did his agency look like last week?
I don't have the exact amount, but I know it's over 30.
Over
30 people.
30. And that takes a little pressure off.
It does, and he also has 30 eyeballs on him waiting to see what he does. So
it's awesome,
puts a little bit more pressure on him to create that good story his first week.
Kind of neat. So it takes the pressure off, but it puts the pressure on in a good way.
Yeah. Right.
Puts the pressure on. I think it's a good point. It puts the pressure on a leader because a leader kind of wants to have that pressure. They want to kind of carry the team on their back right away and just say, look, I'm going to blaze the trail. Follow me.
Yep.
Good stuff.
So we got a great panel on the call, and let's get right into it. You know, last week, again, we hit on the phone work, and hopefully, again, it always starts with activity because activity puts you in the best posture possible for going into the home and helping these families. When you only have three appointments, you're needy, you're thinking about yourself, you're not thinking about the people, and so, you know, the common denominator with all of these guys on the phone today is that they all run 10, 12, 15 appointments a week. They don't run three or four appointments 4 hours away. They run a bunch of appointments in a week, and you guys all probably do it over a 1 or 2 day period. So we don't need to hit on the simple stuff, but that is the common theme here. And it was on last week's call. Last week, it was that everyone on the phone made enough dials to get the right amount of appointments. And again, that's always usually double digit. Are any of you guys under double digit, meaning you're always going for at least 10 appointments?
Yeah.
Okay, I take that silent as a yes. Always over 10. So when you guys are out there in the home, you're concentrating on the family. It's a lot easier to sell and help someone when you're not thinking about yourself. People can smell that. So, but again, last week, and it's important for us to always hit on the main objective. Because when we talk about objectives, whether we're talking about either on the phone or in the home, when you have the major objective, the end result in mind, it takes away the need to get too scripted and worry too much about the script because you know what the objective is. If I were to ask each of you guys, what is your objective on the phone, what would you say?
What's the appointment?
To get the appointment.
Exactly, and so you guys know that, but if you're new on the phone, objective on the phone is to book the appointment. That's the overall philosophy when you're getting on the phone, is to book the appointment. Now, it's important to stick to the script so that you can do that, but don't get taken off track and don't make it overcomplicate it too much, you know, about which product. Somebody was asking the other day, Brandon, what the final expense script, it's got to be way different. It's not. You can change literally two words because you're not selling a product on the phone. You're booking an appointment. And the tools that you need to book the appointment have nothing to do with the product. The tools you need to book the appointment to understand that the objective is to find a time to meet with them. And so you establish the fact that they sent something to us. I have it here in front of me, Brad. you put down this and that. I have a handful of homeowners to take care of over the next few days, and you book the appointment. That's your objective. Now, moving into the home, what is your objective? Let's start with that, and let's start with Ben. What's your objective when you're in the home? Would you say the end result?
End result, get that family protected.
Family protected. Help the family, right? Anything different from you other guys? Doug, Julie, Brad, I mean, that's pretty much it, right?
No, that's
yep.
right in line.
Yep. Yep.
And so if you want to go, that's the end result, but if you want to kind of take it a step further and work through that would be uncover the need, fill the need.
Mm-hmm.
Uncover the need,
and Casey,
and fill the need.
And you're saying it perfectly. I want to add to what Ben said. Get them protected, and you said uncover the need, fill the need. It's uncover the needs, fill the needs.
Yep.
The professionals are out
Absolutely.
There. That the end result that I'm looking, that I was always looking for, was first to protect the family, second to protect their retirement, third to give them an opportunity.
Yep.
Right? Get a policy, protect it, find an annuity, and the third thing is recruit them.
Yep.
Three, and it's all the same thing, Casey, because psychologically you're exactly right. You know, understanding the fundamental things of what are we trying to accomplish, uncover the needs. And it all that kind of those five hearts, because there also can be more needs in children's policy. I mean, more needs in replacing something that they currently have because it stinks. But all
Absolutely.
Of that.
Yep. And so that's our objective. That's the whole philosophy behind sitting with the family is to do that. Okay. And so starting with that, Brandon, first of all, you got any questions right off the bat from anyone?
Well, one question that I have is, I think it's really a great one. How important was it for all of you on the phone, Kate, and I'll let you go around the horn, but how important was it for you guys to initially, you know, make calls from the kitchen table when you were brand new and you were sitting with clients for your first, however long it took you until you were, you know, could produce what you're doing now? And some of you will say, well, I still call from the kitchen table sometimes.
Yeah.
How important was that for you guys in your development? We'll start with Julie.
You know, I really haven't honestly called a lot from the kitchen table, but on a couple occasions when I have had to, you know, I would call Dick Sylvester because, quite honestly, when I first started, I wasn't versed in indexed universal life products. So I had a client that had a proposal from another agent, and she was shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew she liked me, but she asked me to explain it to her. And quite honestly, I couldn't do it. So mm-hmm. I was very honest with her and told her that I didn't tell her exactly how long I'd been in the business, but I told her I was still, you know, learning. And I said, would you
yeah.
mind if I called one of my mentors, who is a guru for me in this business and knows everything? And she said that would be
yep.
wonderful. And Dick was so kind and so accommodating, and he probably spent 10 minutes at least on the phone with me with this client. And she said, you have no idea how much I appreciate that, and I love the fact that you were very honest with me and told me, because I wasn't going to try to blow smoke up her skirt, and because I know I couldn't have done it without Dick's help. So, you know, a few times when I've run into things that I basically don't know enough about yet, because I'm still
yeah,
learning.
And I think, you know, Casey, what kind of stands in the way, not in Julie, you were probably a bad one to go to first, because you came out of the gate writing 35,000, so there may not have been a whole lot of times where you didn't, and you had a little bit of experience coming to us, but there weren't a whole lot of times where people were telling you
yeah.
no, it didn't appear.
Yeah, exactly.
I know Ben, you know, both Casey and I and you know, previous uplines, I know that you've been a big proponent of that. And it, what kind of impact did it have? Because you, what was your background, Ben, before you got into sales, before you got into SFG?
So background, I was a branch manager, largest financial institution in the U.S. prior to SFG,
okay.
with some sales background before that. And I'm
okay.
a huge proponent of calling from the kitchen table. And I tell every single person that you know, I'm bringing into this business, you have to do it. The mistake I made for 6 or 7 weeks going out and seeing families was I had too much pride to pick up the phone and call my upline because I relied on my past experience being good in sales and what I had done that, oh, this is just talking to people. It's no different. I'll do what I've always done, and I'll get sales. And not only did I leave a lot of families hanging for 2 months, I left my own family high and dry because I wasn't money. So
if I don't pay the bills
in the home, whether you're about to write it or not, a lot of times as an agent, you're wrapped up in the emotional side of things. You might be forgetting a form or a signature or needing something. Until you've done this for a while, why not have that mentor holding your hand, helping you out, saving you a trip back to somebody's house?
Yeah, it makes so much sense, especially for somebody brand new. It would, and you've already put in so much work to get there. It's like you drove down the field, you got on the 1 yard line. You know, you're a brand. Let's say, especially for somebody brand new, you're a brand new quarterback. It would be like you calling that play, that fourth down play to get in the end zone yourself, instead of looking at the sideline and looking at somebody who knows what's going on, like the coach, and getting the play. It'd be like you just went, we're going to do this. Let's try it.
You get the bench.
You'd never do that.
Next week.
You get the bench, exactly. And so, you know,
we're
big,
go to
big
everybody on that.
For somebody new, yeah. Doug?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I'll probably owe Edward about 3 phones because I know I blew his phone up a lot in the beginning. I still will call. I think it kind of creates in the home. It, you know, we have a, you know, people don't like to work with the know-it-all and people just kind of taking a guess at something. And I think when you're willing to make a phone call, the clients, the family looks at it as like, well, I've got 2 people working for me now instead of one. And so it creates, hey, I've got a team of people trying to help. You know, I think that's subconsciously it kind of does that. I see that in a lot of faces when I say, well, you know what, I'm going to call my manager. He's been doing this a lot longer than me and just make sure everything's right. And it, there again, it just creates that team concept where, this, you know, I can just see it when they turn around, they're like, this guy's, and they instantly, it opens up. We go into another gear. And it always helps also too with, especially if we're explaining, when I started explaining critical illness and different components of what we're trying to do, I would call Edward and just, you know, kind of validate those things, and it helps validate it to the clients.
Critical period too. You said critical illness. And, you know, some of those concepts, Casey, especially, that was a great answer. So like, I can remember that, you going through kind of that learning process, and it got you to a 5-app average a week so much faster. Casey, you said a minute ago, the only reason I can think that somebody wouldn't do that is because, A, they're stupid, or B, they have an ego thing. Nothing is less attractive than somebody pretending to be an expert.
Yep.
You mean people a mile away. So why not lean on someone that can help you? So anyway, we kind of pass job as a company, and all of your jobs out there is, we said it earlier, protect families. Well, if you blow an opportunity to do that because you didn't make a phone call, then you're not helping the client, you're not helping the company, and you're certainly not helping yourself. And we really don't have a whole lot of time for people like that.
Yep.
So,
Brad, what about yourself?
Well, I think a lot of people don't do it because they're not sure exactly a comfortable way to transition into making that phone call. And
that's a good point. That's a good point.
I called pretty much every single time I was in the home for a couple months. And last night I called Paul Honeygut. I think Doug's right. It does give you some credibility and gives the client some comfort that you're going on the right path. But the way I transition into that phone call is before I move into giving quotes and that sort of thing and pricing, I'll just say that we work with 3 dozen different insurance carriers, and sometimes it's a little difficult to stay on top of all their products, and each one kind of tailors to a different group of people. Some are really good for diabetics, others are really good for heart issues and that sort of thing. And I feel really good about the direction I'm going with you, but I always like to get the opinion of my chief field underwriter. He's been doing it longer than I have, and so let me just get him on the phone. And I just dialed the phone, and I
love the call.
So it's a nice easy way to transition.
Yep, that was good. A good point. And because you don't, you know, I think people, especially maybe when they're new, they think that it makes them, there would be concern that it would create some apprehension, and it really should accomplish the other.
Yeah.
So it's a great way to do it.
Yep. Absolutely. So here's another good question, unless you got one, Brandon, but I want to know, again, in the home, if you're going into a home, the procedure, we can break it down in a 9-point phone script here, but what we always say is, you know, three kind of basic fundamental things you're going to do in the home. The first one is rapport, the second one is emotion, and the third one is assumption. That's kind of the flow of the phone script. It starts with rapport, then it gets into the emotion. Remember, people buy this product out of an emotion. It's a piece of paper. I mean, this is not like a new TV. It's an emotion is the reason why they buy it. It's love, it's fear, it's greed, whatever it is. But your job is to get that emotion out, and then it's assumption. Everything else should just be assumed. We're here to take care of this. Once we find something that fits your needs and fits your budget, I'm going to help you fill out the paperwork. We'll have to ask you some health questions, and we'll submit it to the underwriters for approval. So you're kind of telling what you're going to do. You're not having to ask. That's what I mean by assumption. But the first two parts, rapport and emotion, are very important. Anything special you guys do for rapport? Because emotion is the one I want to spend a little bit more time on. I want to know, you guys start thinking about this right now, the top 2 to 3 questions that you use in the home to dig the emotion out. Because that's the most important thing. But start with rapport. Anything special you guys do on rapport? What's it like when you get in the home? And anybody can jump in here. Whoever's got something on the tip of their tongue to say.
Casey, this is Doug. I always like to, you know, walk around the house. I used to not do that, and
yep.
I started to do that because, you know, it's
kind of
like. Yeah, and I like to look at pictures on the wall and kind of make it more, because most agents won't do that. They'll just go right. I used to go right at the kitchen table, and it was blah, 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 you know, just 1, 2, 3, 4, and I followed this, and I was like, you know what? And I heard on a couple calls these guys asking for tours of the house, and because it just, when you care to ask people about their home and you see pictures and you start asking about their pictures, then it just gets them more involved in you know, and it's easier to do the other points when you kind of get that
laid out. And they're taking this coverage out because of their family, because of the people in those pictures. So probably kind of goes hand in hand. If you're talking about rapport, it's always good to start with, you know, if it's a husband, wife, you know, especially if I'm sitting there talking about mortgage protection or final expense or what have you, you know, I want to kind of know a little bit about them. Don't overcomplicate this. Don't have to script rapport, but get to know the couple. You know, when did you guys meet? How long have you been married for? Where'd you meet at? How'd you meet? Tell us about, you know, tell me about it. How many kids do you have? What, you know, what ages are, that kind of thing. Just kind of getting the family stuff is very important. The home is also important because, again, this protection a lot of times is used to keep the roof, that particular roof, over that family's head. So getting to know a little bit about the home is good, too. Anybody else on rapport?
Yeah, Casey.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been, like to ask them for something to eat. You know, I heard that from Ed O'Rell, and I thought that was crazy. I was uncomfortable. I started doing that. It's almost a sure thing. In fact, every house that I've ever eaten in, I've written.
You've written something in every home that you've asked for food. Like we say a lot of times, it's probably the best sales tip we have for the in-home presentation is to eat. Because it seems like everyone that asks for food and eats with the family, they have like a 90% close ratio. There's just something, again, it goes back to why are we doing rapport in the first place, Dan? I mean, what's the point of it?
Why are we doing the rapport?
Yeah, what's the philosophy behind rapport?
Hey, connect with your client. You know, it's, they're buying from you, And if you don't connect with them, they're not going to do it. If you have the best product, if you have the best price, if they don't like you, they won't buy from you.
It's harder to say no to somebody that has been real and has kind of emotionally connected with you, you know. And so it's important to kind of get in there and be real about it, you know. Don't be phony. And, you know, and I know the company that when I first got into insurance, they were real. They just didn't understand how to teach the warm-up or rapport the right way. You know, they would just go find something that they're interested in and talk about. It was just, you could tell, it was real phony. So, but getting in there and, you know, eating with them, how do you get into that, Ben? What do you just ask for food?
Yeah, you just ask. So, Casey, you're my homeowner. Hey,
yep.
Casey, how are you doing today?
Good.
Ask you a favor. A little behind today. I haven't had a chance to get anything to eat. Do you have a snack or something that I can kind of munch on?
I love it. They probably kind of look at you a little weird, but they give you some, right?
It's a look of awe at first, immediately followed by a smile, and then, what do you want? Oh, what are you going to have? You know, I'm assuming they're going to eat too, even though...
What are you going to have? It's snack time.
It's snack time. And then,
snack time with the Jones house.
While they're getting me something, I'm doing just like Doug said. Oh, you know, I get up from the table, look at pictures on the family, go into the kitchen, look at their granite countertop, talk about that, whatever it is.
Yep.
We're connecting. We
yep.
go back, down, eat, and then, you know, move on to the next step.
Now they're kind of sitting with a buddy.
That's right.
Which is good. Client for life type stuff. Lynn would always talk about that, you know, how to create a client for life. So, Brad, you were getting ready to jump in on that. Anything different on rapport you do?
Well, an easy way to get somebody to like you, I think, is just to compliment them. And, you
yep.
know, if you compliment somebody, they instantly like you. So I'll find something that I like, whether it be something in their house, something with their family, with them, you know, personally. I'll just find something to compliment them on. And it automatically, they smile, they like you, and starts developing some trust. So
I love it. Something I found that was always fun to compliment and good to compliment people on was was the fact that this was something that was important to them
mm-hmm.
to protect their family, because, you know, unfortunately there are probably families out there that, you know, don't feel like this kind of coverage would be important. I can't imagine not wanting to, you know, protect my family. Same with you guys. So, but, and you kind of a little bit of an assumption there too, kind of putting them in that place so that they can, so they will be at that place. You know, you paint the picture around them so they're in the picture now, you know. So, and you're giving them a compliment, and it should be something that you should commend them on too, you know. So, good stuff. How about the emotion? Top two or three questions. Julie.
How do I elicit the emotion?
Yes.
Through storytelling. I think storytelling...
Okay.
Personally, is one of the best ways to bring out emotion from people. And I don't want to say fortunately, but unfortunately, I've been through cancer with both of my parents and lost both of them that way at fairly young ages. So I have some, you know, when people, you have to build a rapport, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with everything that the guys have said. I do the exact same thing.
Okay.
But when you're eliciting the emotion, I mean, after you've built a rapport and you're comfortable and you're sitting down at the table, quite honestly, we have a wonderful system in place, because I pretty much go directly off the in-home script and place mm-hmm. the lead in front of them after I've built a rapport. And I learned this from another call, depending on if you're speaking to a man or a woman, it's how you ask the question. Mm-hmm. With a woman, it may be more like, what were you feeling?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you filled this out, what was the primary concern and what were you hoping this mortgage protection could do, you know, for you or your family? And they'll usually explain, and 9 times out of 10, everyone is going to give you the same answer.
Yep.
You know, they're going to tell you, well, obviously, if something happens to me, I want to make sure my husband, my wife, my daughter, you know, whatever, can pay off the mortgage. And
okay.
then I usually go in, you know, you explain yourself. Basically, again, I go right off the SFG script and explain the numbers.
Okay.
And you know, you've got a rapport going back and forth with them, and usually at that point, they're telling me stories, and I'm telling them stories. And they're thinking, oh, my God, this could happen to me.
Yep.
Well, I go into a story and say, thank God that my father had insurance because he was 55 years old and had missed 2 days of work and 37 years with Kellogg's. And my mother, you know, was his caregiver, but he died at 55 years old. So sometimes that story will come up. Who would think of a man that had missed 2 days of work and 37 years would all of a sudden have a brain tumor and die 8 months later? So I may not be quite that graphic, but mm-hmm. it's relatability to people that, oh, my gosh, this could happen. And
that's
especially if they only have insurance through their work, well, guess what? Had my dad only had insurance through Kellogg's, do you know what I mean? It would have,
oh, yeah.
You know, he retired because he could no longer work. He was sick. And then, so yeah.
You ask them the question, but you kind of relate your story as you're doing that. And that's such a powerful point. And the whole, you know, we all, hopefully, you know, not hopefully, but we know that everyone on the phone out in the field, you know, we all have stories like that, you know, of people that were close to us that, you know, passed away before their time or whatever. And they were either protected or they weren't, you know, and either way, we have a story to tell. And, but you get it, Julie, you get that it's about that emotion, and you've got to get them thinking about what could happen, because unfortunately what they're probably thinking about more than anything is the fact that a stranger is in their home eating with them, talking to them about insurance. And mm-hmm. what is this presentation? Is there going to be some sort of hard close? That's what they're thinking about. Guys, anyone who's ever been in a situation where a salesman has been in their home, that's generally what you're thinking about, is what is this going to entail? What's going to be my way out? You know, all this kind of stuff. Our job is to break that and focus on the most important thing, which is why am I here? I'm putting it on them. Why am I here? And then getting that emotion out on the table and helping them understand, and what would it look like? This is a good question. What would it look like if Ben, like if I'm sitting with Ben and Sarah, what would it look like? What would it feel like right now if Ben passed away yesterday? Right, we got that from Marshall Whalen. Like instead of saying, what if Ben passed away tomorrow? What if Ben passed away yesterday? What would today look like? What would that feel like from a financial position, too? And you get that emotional.
I use that line all the time.
That's good.
And it really gets people thinking.
The emotion is the most important part of the presentation. That's why we're not spending time today talking about what if somebody says I can't afford, what if somebody says, well, spend time doing that too, and it'd probably be a whole other call in itself, Brandon, just for like objections, things that happen in the home. But the crazy thing is when you get good at rapport and especially emotion, the rest of it takes care of itself. You get so many more objections. These guys on the phone don't get the same objection as some of you guys who may be emailing Brandon right now. It's because they focus on that emotional part of the sale, and you flush a lot of that stuff out when that happens. Any other quick comments on objections?
Hey, Casey, I got one.
Yep.
I got this is Doug. You know, a lot of people always, you know, when you come in, you know, a way to get a cost objection back to the emotion side of the quadrant is if someone mm-hmm. says, hey, Doug, I just want to know what this is going to cost me. And I always say, okay. Well, that's an excellent question. And I said, I'm going to answer that. But while I'm working on that, would you explain to me what it's going to cost her, you know, Jane, if you die tomorrow, Joe, tell me what that would cost
that.
Her.
What
would that cost look like? Because, and I really, Joe Jordan opened up a can of emotion when he got up and talked about being an advocate. Don't be afraid to ask those questions. I would rather get kicked out of the home. I'm never disrespectful, ever. But I would rather get kicked out of a home for being real and honest and truthful than being asked nicely, okay, we'll think about it and leave.
Yeah,
I would rather be honest and brutal. And I like what she just said about, you know, authenticity comes with bringing your story. If you're open and honest with people about things and about, you know, things that have happened in your life, it really, you know, then it's not just them telling, giving you all their goods and you're just sitting there. And then one other thing.
You got to be a little bit vulnerable sometimes to get that from them, you know.
And one other thing I do, I do it pretty much in every house if I can. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but I always like to sit between them. I like the husband on one side of the table and the wife staring at him on the other. And that way, and I'm kind of over here in the center, because when I'm asking him or her, you know, that those questions, that Marshall Whalen question, hey, what is tomorrow? Okay, Joe's gone. He died yesterday. What does that look like to you? I want her to look at him and be thinking about that question instead of them sitting beside each other. As I force them to kind of face each other and see that void in between them. And that's really helped me out a lot.
Interesting. I like it. So real quick, what about the assumption? How do you guys, what do you guys actually say when you get down to close time? How do you transition from that to the application, or have you already started the application in the process, kind of like a very assumptive close? Ben, how do you do it?
From that point, you know, it's just from the, you know, I've shown them prices already.
Okay. You have three options laid out, two options laid out, or do you do the single elimination where you start at the top, eliminate, drop it down a little bit, eliminate, and show them three to four options and kind of stagger it down? How do you do it? Because I know there's two different trains. I always started with the top and then let them know, look, there's a lot of things we can do to this. I want to show you, I want to show you the best thing for your family right now. It may be the most expensive thing, unfortunately, because it is the best thing, but, you know, there's a lot of things we can do to this to still fit it in your needs, but still make sure it fits in your budget. So this is what it looked like. This is what it costs. And if it has return of premium on it, my close was always, let me ask you this, you know, could you afford to save $280 a month and put it towards a coverage like this? Does that fit the budget? And then once they say yes or no, you know, I'm going to the application. Or, Ben, do you do it the opposite way where option A and option B, or option A, B, and C, which one fits the budget the best?
So both. And, you know, if I'm doing somebody relatively healthy and it's term, I'm doing it what you just said first, kind of starting with the Cadillac guys. We'll look at it. If that's outside of your comfort zone, keep in mind we can make some changes so that does fit your budget. And we work our way till it fits their budget. And I'll press them. Are you sure you're comfortable with this? Do you want to look a little bit lower? If they do, then we look a little lower. If not, they're like, no, I don't want to get any less insurance than that.
Okay.
I know we're solid. If it's a whole life or a critical period concept that I'm showing them, then two, maybe options at most. What do you like? Either way, I'm sitting back. I'm being quiet until they say something. Whoever speaks first loses.
Yep.
Wait for them. Yeah, you know, we like that one. Are you sure? Okay. I get out my paperwork. Here's what I need from you guys. Your ID, a voided check, any medications you're taking, and your doctor's information. And
what is on the table? Now, you say you get out your paperwork. Are your applications and pens already on the table?
I have. I take my laptop with me.
Yep.
I have a huge, not a huge binder, but just an all-in-one binder that I keep all of my apps. I throw it on the table when I get there. I want them to see we're filling out paperwork. When I tell them, you know, I've got 30 different insurance companies to pull from, I look over at my binder, and then I start grabbing paperwork once they've said I like this one. And then I'm very assumptive. Casey, what's your middle name? Okay.
Love it.
And then you're grabbing those things for me, and we just get to work.
And that's important because even though we just talked about the kind of three steps would be rapport, emotion, assumption. Assumption starts from the very moment you get there. And from the very moment you kind of start talking business, assumption has already been on the table. Like Ben said, pens are out, you know. Doug, you have a pen out for each person, right? Everything is that you're already closing the whole time. And the beautiful thing about being assumptive the whole time, and when I mean assumptive, I mean saying things like that, Ben, what we're going to do is we're going to find something that fits, you know, your budget and your needs. And once we find that, not if we find that, once we find that, then we're just going to fill out some simple paperwork. I have to ask you a few health questions. We'll send it in. That's being a census, meaning I'm not having to ask them if that's okay. And that takes away, when you're assumptive throughout the whole presentation, it takes away the need for a close or some cheesy hook line or something like that where, you know, how does it sound? You don't have to say that. You're always closing the whole time because you're being assumptive. This is what we're going to do today. We're already going to take care of this. We are viewing the lead as the start of the application. That's our mindset when we walk into the home, is these guys have already started the application process. I'm just there to help them finish it. The best closers in our company go in with that mindset. It's already sold. All I've got to do is find something that fits the right budget, fill that need, send in the application. Brian, any questions real quick? I know we're running out of time.
I think you guys have covered most of them. A lot of the stuff we covered last week, I've gotten some questions such as, you know, how many leads are people taking? I know that varies. I think that, you know, from a company standpoint, everybody wants a minimum of 10 A leads and 20 bonus leads. I think that's kind of the magic number. If you don't want to work bonus leads, take more A leads if you've been here for a while. Number of appointments people are running, you know, I think the answers that would be gotten here would be between 10 and 12. 10. Yeah, 10 to 12, depending on who they are. One of the questions I got that I thought was interesting is two questions. One, what percentage of the business is being done as whole life applications, meaning basically it was kind of a critical period type question. How many, you know, what percentage of the time do you have to move to something outside of, you know, just the non-medical term because it's an age issue or a sickness issue? So I would love to hear that from these guys. You know, what percentage do you guys use critical period concepts?
Start with you, Ben.
I mean, it's quite a bit. I would say between 40 to 50%.
Okay.
Yeah, and from a company standpoint, that's what we see
right.
Around 45, 43%.
And if you added to that question, how many is a lower death benefit? And you might have said that, Brandon, meaning maybe it wasn't a whole life policy, but it was just you chopped the death benefit in half on the term. So instead of $150,000, you chopped it down to $75,000 with some riders. How many times would you say that's the case, Ben?
80% of the time, maybe a little higher even.
And that you can't do a big decrease in death benefit on a term or show the final expense type policy with a low death benefit on a mortgage protection lead where somebody's older and they have a larger mortgage. You can't do that without explaining the critical period concept. And we have an unbelievable MP3 on the website that breaks down the whole critical period concept. If you guys don't get how to explain that, and I know you guys on this call did on the host code, but for everyone listening, if you don't have that in your car with you, you're crazy because you need to get in home and you need 80, you're hearing Ben say 80, 90% of his applications involve him having to drop the death benefit down significantly to keep it in the price and the right cost range for them. You can't do that without explaining it right because you'll have people just laugh at you and not kick you out of the home. So you need to go back and listen to that.
And you're missing out on, Casey, potentially 20 to 30% more business that you could be writing. So if you're
absolutely
a 20, let's say that you're a 20 to 25% close ratio, which I think is low, I would say that if activity is not your problem, if you're not closing 60 to 70% of the time in the home, it's because you're leaving things like that on the table. You know, you can't explain how important it is to make sure that somebody has 5 years worth of mortgage payments or can pay off half their mortgage or whatever the case may be, because you don't know how to explain that and create the value in that. And, guys, let's not forget that that is our number one goal in the home is making them kind of, after they're emotional, you got to kind of create the value in what they're wanting to accomplish. And we say emotion is extremely important because you can't do that without getting them emotional. But this is a sales job. You know, you guys got to take it extremely seriously that it's your job to get in there and make sure that they see the value in what you're recommending that they do. And I love what they were saying earlier, because calling from the kitchen table would help with that a lot of times.
Yeah, it really would.
Another question that I had, Casey, because I know that, you know, I think if what they're saying is correct, I mean, I know that the company percentages are right along with Ben said. Another question I had is, and I don't necessarily want to ask you guys on the phone. I want to tell you the company's answer on this, but
what is your go-to carrier on term? What's your go-to carrier on whole life? Casey, how would you answer that question?
I would say ask your manager, first and foremost. Just in case there's a particular, something particular about your situation or your state, maybe a carrier product's not approved or whatever, but if I was your manager, I would say my go-to carrier and my go-to product or products would be American Animal. And they're pretty much the whole product line, especially if I'm talking to a bunch of brand new guys, because when we first started branding, all I had in my bag for the first couple months was American Animal. And it was okay that I was taking a little bit of a commission hit because the issue rates were better. They paid daily. I could actually call and talk to the people at the home office and get things done. And they weren't so hard and fast on certain things where if I need a little bit of wiggle room, if I talk to the right person, I could possibly get something overturned. American Amicable has the best of all of those right there. And we're getting ready to possibly get – we already got more pay on the new product line, but they need a solution. So,
we'll
try to work something out, pretty soon where we're going to get more on the term side. And we got the lead credit. So, yes, American Amicable is the way to go. Plus, I would love for all of us, all of the top producers to qualify for at least one trip. And when you spread your products out, sometimes it gets a little tricky to do that. And let's face it, I mean, we're in this business, obviously, to make a living, but, let's not get so caught up in making a living that we forget to have a life and travel together. And that stuff that got you and I into the business and kept us in the business, Brandon. I mean, trips were such an important part for me and Sarah that it's one of the things that kept me in this business was knowing that I had qualified or almost qualified for a trip and getting to travel. Not a lot of people get to do that. So I know sometimes we don't talk about travel enough as far as what business we should put where, but that's a big thing. And if you're a leader, you want your people to travel with you too. It's fun.
I agree 100%. American Amicable is the way to go. And how can you be getting a high comp, whole life final expense type product, and also
getting the lead credit.
Every reason in the world to do that. So if you're an agent out there and you're saying, well, I'm having a hard time with AMM or, I'm not liking this or had a policy or two declined, guys, reach out to us. Reach out to your upline. We will get, we will help you get that fixed because too many people are having way too much success with that company for you not to have the same. And it's such an ease of business. How big of a difference was it for you, Casey, when you had one website to go to check all your pending?
Exactly.
One company to get everything. Yeah, one way of doing things. You spread yourself out in five or six different insurance companies, and they all operate differently.
Yep. So, that's tricky. Good stuff.